There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, returning with another weekly look at the world of non-league football, the world of non-league football, and the wider world of football too. With this week, we are in the stories leading the back pages. So I am pleased to say that my co-host this week is no stranger to the show. He's no stranger to the debate of keeping fans at the heart of football. And actually, he's no stranger to me calling him a stranger. But he has a real name, and many more that he's called by some as well who disagree with him, I'm sure. But we affectionately call him Swampy. And it's a welcome back to Swampy.
Thank you very much, Tim. Good evening to the listener, and good evening to yourself, my friend.
Well, it's good to have you back on, and it seemed a fitting... With Mr. Anderson off doing what he's doing, very well indeed as well. Well done, Simon and Dave. We're trying to bring a different co-host in every week, and we'll get to the Super League and all that debate shortly, but... Of course, you're continentally based now. So I suppose we should start is to find out how COVID has affected football in Belgium and the world you currently live in.
Yeah, well, football is pretty much universally had the same apply to it, where in the very opening of the season, they thought they could cope and they could provide, safe space and so on and so forth. And the team I watch here at Union Saint-Gilloise, 12,000 capacity ground, average supporters of 3,000. You're thinking, well, this should be no problem at all. We could all basically stand at least 5 feet apart from each other and be able to watch football. I think the football club would have been very happy with that, but unfortunately, after the third game, the rules were changed. I mean, the first game you could drink, the second game you couldn't drink, the third game you couldn't have water, you couldn't bring your own drinks. And it got to a stage where it was farcical because no one knew exactly what to do and how to do it. So this season, the 2020-21, I always forget where we are now in the world in dates. So it's pretty much the first three games watch, and then you either watch from home or you... You basically just have to stop watching football for the period of time. And the supporters have been very good about it, to be honest, because the vast majority, I mean, there are a number of clubs that are the exception, but they've stayed away. I mean, our stadium is actually in a forest. So you could watch the game from a certain few angles, but basically, because we have a curfew here in Belgium as well, so bedtime by 10 o'clock, the games normally start at 9 o'clock. So indeed, well, they say not bedtime, be home for 10 o'clock. Game starts at 9 o'clock ordinarily. So if you got caught out in the woods, you knew you were watching a football, you get a fine. So, but as I say, it's been very much missed. The supporters, certainly of Union, have been 48 years of waiting for any form of trophy in reality and league, because they are the third most, the league 13 times. They're an absolute... very, very famous club in this country, and 48 years since in the top league, and lo and behold, they go and do it during lockdown. I mean, to say the club has had its ups and downs, and we're talking about semi-professional football, and obviously Union are a full-time team. 8 years ago, they were sponsored by a local kebab shop. That is no word of a lie. They're in the fourth division, and Belgian football works in, there are two professional divisions, the top league, where the likes of Antwerp and Anderlecht and Bruges play. Then there's 1B with 8 teams in it, which Union have been in. And then below that, it's all semi-pro. And then below that, it's even less. So Union have been down in the doldrums for many, many years. And as I say, having a local kebab shop pinned against your shirt to get back where they are has been absolutely fantastic. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens next season. European football could be on the cards. We nearly came close to it a couple of seasons ago with the UEFA Cup, but our ground wasn't up to the standards it was required, unfortunately. But no, continental football here in Belgium, it's loved. I mean, it's like anything else, and the supporters in Belgium are very passionate about not only their own clubs but other clubs, and you know, semi-professional football and non-league football in general. They just like football and played in the right way, in the right manner. And as I say, that's one of the reasons why I'm watching football here as well as when I get back. My love, as you know, is FC United of Manchester. And I think we all miss and all have missed the camaraderie of being at your football ground, speaking to people. And I think the saddest thing really about it all is that in the time of lockdown, and I'm sure it's happened to every football club, we've lost people along the way that passed on, you know, that we would normally speak to at the match, you know, and have a bit of banter with, maybe have a pint at the bar, and that was your weekly exchange with that person. And many football supporters have died, unfortunately, either through COVID or through other illnesses over the last 12 months, and we never get that back. We never get to see them again, and football was our way of being able to see them. So let's hope that these measures that have been brought in, certainly in the UK, to make sure people can watch the game responsibly and safely, and by non-league day, we've got enough supporters back in football to start enjoying it again.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognise those people that we have lost, because you know, some of those would have been, you know, essential turnstile operators, people, you know, behind the scenes as well as just fans that you wouldn't even know their name, but you'd have a conversation with them with most weekends. And I think. Yeah, you're right. That's probably going to be one of the saddest points of when we do all finally get back in the ground, and you notice those faces that aren't going to be there. And now, obviously, I don't know if the reaction has been so bad out there. The every news headline on the main news, the sports news, and everything this week has been about the reaction to this proposed European Super League. Now, Belgium domestic football, I guess, is probably been one of the worst hit by in recent years of the rise of the big competitions in Spain, in Italy, and the Premier League. Has it been big news out there as well?
I think it's big news all around the world. In all fairness, I think it's one of those bits of news that for a lot of supporters and a lot of people involved in football knew at some stage they were going to attempt it. I think the supporters over here, because they know that the Belgium League itself isn't necessarily going to be affected because they don't have the financial clout, and equally they don't have the supporter base in order to attract or be part of the big 12, so to speak. But it has been a talking point. I mean, I've spoken with a lot of my friends that are supporters of both teams here in Belgium and other European teams. It's one of shock, astonishment, for a lot of them, but for a lot of us, it's about time they came clean and said what they were going to say, and they've done that now. Well, by goodness me, it didn't last very long, did it? I mean, I spoke on the Sunday with a friend, and on the Monday morning we were talking, going, we play paddle, which is a small version of like tennis and squash. Great game, very popular here in Europe. And over the game we were talking about it, and I said, listen, it's not going to last. You can guarantee this will absolutely implode. And for me, the downside is we're talking about it now, but I wanted to talk about this continuously because I think it was good. In a way, it sounds bizarre, but I think it was going to be good for non-league football.
I think it was good for non-league football. It's good for football as a whole, in a way, because it brought people together. So you know, even if you were red or you were blue, you were suddenly united in saying, well, actually, this is our game and this is important. But non-league has got an opportunity now to prove that it's different. My big concern is that there's a groundswell in non-league that's trying to emulate the Premier League. So we've got almost every club wants an academy, and they want the best boys, they want the best girls, and it's youth football, as we've spoken for years on this, is so important to building a community and a club, that if we go down that academy route, we could be falling into the same pitfalls that the Premier League and Super League has followed.
I think you're right. I think organics. Your club's got to grow organically. What we've seen, and this is the fault of football in general, and the people involved to a degree in football, because they see from the Premier League the money, the emulation, and the kudos, and then they see it being filtered down to a certain degree. And if you're a football club that do have a little bit of money in semi-professional football, and I'm going to exclude the National League primarily from that, because the vast majority are full-time, and in my opinion, they're a professional league opposed to a semi-professional league, with the exception of a couple. You've got chairmen or chairpersons who want to emulate that model of the Premier League. And for me, that's not what grassroots football or indeed semi-professional football is about. I mean, the amount of teams now in the game that are either hybrid or full-time in semi-professional football is at its highest. Now, for me, that just goes against everything and the principles of semi-professional football. It always has done, always has been. When I was on the show on a regular basis with you guys, I used to talk about it all the time, because I just feel that it's so unfair on football clubs doing it in the right way, in the right manner, because money shouldn't dictate, but money does dictate. And I think when you look at, you know, let's build an academy, let's get all the best players, well, it's sort of like a greed. It's a manifestation of let's be the best and forget about everybody else. And we talk about, and as you know, I do a Northern Premier League podcast with a great group of journalists and football people, and we talk about the football family all the time. And I'm going to say this, and I said it on that show, I believe the football family in reality is dead. I don't think there is such a thing as a football family, because we've seen so many times how people just fend for themselves. In crisis, yes, we come together, but generally we're all at it ourselves, and it needs something like this Super League perhaps to bring us together. But I think I think because that itself would have not a great bearing. I think if it had gone ahead, I think we would have seen a benefit. Because, I mean, as an example, I know on the FC United message boards and from the club perspective, membership has gone up in the last week. People from not only the Manchester region, but people from the north of Ireland, from the south of Ireland, from parts of the UK, saying, listen, I've had enough now. I want to come and watch real football. We're talking, you know, I want to see real football with real passionate players, real passionate supporters. And I think if the Super League had happened, in fairness, only a few clubs would have benefited. The likes of FC United would have benefited massively, because Manchester United were going to be involved in it. And that trickle down would have certainly ultimately come to FC United and Manchester. And equally with maybe City, supporters might have gone to other clubs within the area. But again, it would only have been a finite of supporters going to a finite of football clubs. So we need to look at redressing financially the balance within the whole football pyramid. And we talk about it, and over the last 7 to 10 years, I've discussed it with you on so many occasions, and, you know, putting a structure in place to make it fair, make it appealing to everybody, make local community football clubs. Because, I mean, if you look at, certainly in this COVID response, how many local football community clubs have done so much work with food banks and so on and so forth, far beyond their financial means, but the goodwill of the people of the community and the goodwill of those people, because they are part of a community, and to be rewarded with that, I mean, for me, that should happen. There should be a reward for the amount of work done in the community. Getting an accolade, getting a trophy saying, you know, community club of the... No, well, that's great. And the year later that club folds, no one's going, well, they were community club of the last year, so let's put infrastructure in, you know, and professional footballers, these multimillionaires talking about, you know, oh, they're happy that it's not happening. There are a few that do great work, and in fact, there's many that do great work without us knowing about it, don't get me wrong. But there's so much more that football can do to help football. And if you can't help yourself as a footballing entity, you can't expect anyone to come in and help you if football itself can't help itself. So I'm glad it came out. I think there's those big six in the UK and the others, the supporters, the players, the management did want it. It all came from the top. It was a money-making opportunity to expand. It'll come back. They're not going to go away. And eventually it will happen. But it was nice for 72 hours to see in the football world stick two fingers up to big business. If we could do that as a society, it would be even better.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the undercurrents, the other stories behind it, because on Friday UEFA had had this meeting with some of the clubs and part of that committee to discuss the changes in the Champions League. So they're going to expand to 36 clubs from 32, and I do sense that it was almost like this has always been on the shelf, but these clubs suddenly thought, well, now's our opportunity to sort of stamp our feet and make everybody aware, and it backfired on everybody, really.
100%, I completely agree with you, Tim. I think that meeting, there were certain club or certain club representatives that went into that meeting that have had quite a lot of say in the way the European mechanism works over the next few years, 2024, when it changes its new format. And I think they went in knowing they weren't going to get what they wanted, but they had up their sleeve or in their pocket, we're going to turn around if in the next 24 to 48 hours, a collective you saying, we're leaving you, and what are you going to do about it? I think they really knew that they weren't going to get away with it, but the negotiations through the new Champions League structure wasn't as good as they wanted.
Yeah.
And I think they were told back, when they went back to the owners of the football clubs were told, right, now we do this.
Yeah.
And as
I think you wait for a plan to announce it on Monday. And you know, we've had the league chairman, CEOs in recent weeks on this show, and they get a lot of abuse for the way they run the leagues, or as people suggest, don't run the leagues. And then I look that it's almost been missed by most of the media. These new Champions League suggestions, they're going to have a league of 36 clubs, but there's only going to be 10 fixtures that each of these clubs play. Now, if that had come forward from one of the chairmen or one of the leagues at non-league level, it would have been laughed out of even debate. But
of course, yes, you're 100% right. And equally, with some of the proposals that were part of the this new league were equally as ludicrous. I mean, the fact that they were saying that young people are now bored of football because it takes too long, so we're going to shorten the game. You might as well shorten the game, widen the goalposts, have fly goalie. I mean, basically, the statistic where they've got them from, it bemuses me to say that people, I mean, an hour and a half of your life, no one's watching football anymore. They're saying football is over, no one's watching football. Well, for me, They don't care if people don't watch football. I mean, it was a misnomer, because they don't care if people don't go to watch football. What they want to do is to get people to watch football on television, and use a huge Asian market so they can. Because they never said where they were going to play these games. Equally, did they?
They never said they
could have been 1 week. It could be US, next week back to China, and we know the Asian market for football is incredible. So again, financially, it was to the benefit of a few, and the vast majority of people were not interested in it at all. But it was interesting to listen to a few pundits and listen to people the way they spoke about it. Those people that feared for the jobs, perhaps, or thinking, well, you know, I've had 20 years of this, it's really been good. And, oh, hold on a second, I don't like these people here. They're the very same thing that they did to people 20 years ago to create where we are in football now. But, you know, everyone's entitled to an opinion. I mean, they have the vast majority of supporters, players and managers came out with the right tone. And I would just find it really funny and incredible to see how, if every player had been banned at an international level, what kind of managers would, who was going to manage a team that was going to basically play in a non-relegation, non-promotion division? What players are they going to attract, because those that do play for them can't play for their country and can't take part in the World Cup or, let's say, Olympic Games or any cup domestic decision. And I just couldn't see where it was going to go, because as soon as they said that was it. It was over, you know. But they'll come back and they'll probably get an A team of players into the Premier League and they'll use that as their A team, and they'll have this, and they'll say, which is, I mean, there's enough football as it is. The European Cup should be just the European Cup, a nice simple thing. The minnow versus the giant, in the same way we're talking tonight about the FA Vars and the FA Trophy. The minnow versus the giant. That's the beauty of football, not this monotonous, boring turn now. Let's play all the same way constantly, constantly, constantly. It's just absolutely bobbins. But it's been humorous.
It's been humorous.
And it's made me chuckle on many occasions seeing people lose their head over it and thinking it's not going to happen. Yeah. Just don't go overboard. I mean, it does show us more broadly what society is like and how society sometimes does react to something that really people care passionately about. It would be nice if we cared a bit more about other things as well, and we're as passionate, you know, to have 1,000 people on the outside Chelsea, you know, demonstrating against that. Fantastic. But also take that on board and look at what society's like and how it's working. And if you want a fair, equal share of things, you've got to change things for the betterment of everybody. And football supporters for a small period of time shown that solidarity, which was nice. And hopefully, if there is an opportunity to move forward, if there's an opportunity where we can grasp this, where we can get fair play, we can get, let's say, maybe a salary cap, or we can get something in place, if we can do these things, then all well and good. But we've been at this juncture so many times, Tim, where something's happened monumental, and we've gone, right. And then 6 months down the line, we're talking about clubs going into liquidation, clubs disbanding.
My concern is almost the timing of it, that particularly where lockdown is lifting here. It's been big news this week. By next week, people will have forgotten about it, and they're desperate then to go meet up with their mates and watch the big games on the Premier League or on the broadcasting channels that have probably played a role in getting us to this stage.
Yeah, you're right, and I think already, you know, because games are coming thick and fast, and you know, once the social distancing is where you can actually go to the bar and let's say someone's got a beer gun and put a television out there. The Euros are coming as well, so let's not forget that. And you'll be able to watch that on the local. Everyone forgot about it. Those that are passionate about sports, about football, from a grassroots level, from a non-league level, and a few from the higher echelons of football will still care about it. But the vast majority of people would not care in one iota, because they'll be all they're interested in is their team playing well and going to the pub and watching the game. But we know that football fans are fans of a club that drink beer in a pub. Football supporters are those that put the money into the coffers of the football club to make it survive. And semi-professional footballers and semi-professional football, it is the money that's generated by the supporter and the work that they do throughout the entire year, every year. I've been looking today at the clubs that are in the FA Vars, and how many years have been in existence. And it is absolutely incredible. There's teams from 1882, 1885. I was looking at it thinking, oh, they've won. They're 1886. No, no, there's a team from 1882. Oh, 1901, old part-timers have just arrived. I mean, the game has been around for such a length of time. It's testament, I think, more so for these teams that are FA Vars teams in step six, step seven. And other teams in semi-professional, but they're still around. Yeah. How can you be still around when you're getting 20 to 30 supporters? You know, you're paying for your own catering, but you're playing at a decent standard of football, and you've been around since 1886. That's absolutely incredible. There's no other sport or any other profession would be around still to this day. So that's testament to the semi-professional football, because supporters that go, the lifeblood that go to the game, and look after it, and do the mowing of the pitch, or as you do huge amounts of work at your football club, and people give that time for free primarily, and that's what's kept these clubs afloat. So you know, go to the pub, watch your club on the big screen, and then tell me that you're a football fan, and I just said, no, you're not. You're watching on the big TV. You're telling me you're an aficionado because you can watch it on a 50-inch screen. No, go to a football match and then tell me what football's all about, because you can't smell the turf, you can't smell the liniment, you can't drink a cup of Bovril in the pub. Well, you probably can probably get a Bovril in the pub, but you can't get pie, chips and gravy and sit on a terrace and talk nonsense with someone that you'd never known before and go away thinking that was a great experience and go back the next week. Can't do it. It's absolutely wonderful. So, you know, yes, funny, humorous, enjoyable, Not going to happen. It'll come back. And I just wish really the Premier League and its ilk would disappear for good anyway, and let them have their own, little bit of football hedonism, and that all the money can stay within them, because it's never been trickled down anyway. And if it had trickled down, we would be a little upset. But it's never trickled down. We've never had anything from them. Never will.
Well, there's been, I'll give them that there has been some of the grants have come down this year. But yeah, I mean, my tip would be you don't call it super. I mean, normally you go in a shop, you see something that says super, and you know that's not super. As soon as you append super to it, you super unleaded petrol. Is that really worth the extra 20p a litre? Super bock beer. It gives you a bigger headache, I know, but. But
Super Ted. I can't see Marvel doing the epic adventures of Super Ted and Spotty. You know, although they do have the rights to it, I believe. You know, you're right. I mean, super. I mean, I was walking down past a shop earlier on, you know, one of these shops that sells anything from tin tacks to tractors. And in the window, it had brand new Just In. And it was a set of curling tongs. And in the corner, it had 1999. And on the packet, it said, new, you know, one of these things that in the shop window for years, never sold. And that's what, I mean, you know, brand new, something super. It's like football boots. I mean, these new football boots, they're not super. They're just injury-prone football boots. And shin pads, injury-prone shin pads. I mean, when you and I played football, Tim, you wore a proper pair of shin pads because you played against, on a Saturday or Sunday league, you played against hard footballers. And hard footballers would wear shin pads because they knew they're going to get kicked back. And we used to wear shin pads because basically we knew we'd get whacked if we were any good. But they protected you. I never walked off a football pitch, or occasionally, but I never walked off a football pitch spending more time on the floor rolling round, primarily because it was always boggy and horrible and your shirts were made out of something that basically made you 15 stone when you ran. But that aside, we actually played the game in the right way, the right spirit, wore the right equipment, and anything super now that comes out is, as you say, is definitely not super.
Yeah,
well, apart from noodles, because super noodles are wonderful.
Super noodles, yeah, I can survive on those. I
mean, inexpensive.
I mentioned to somebody this week that it's more like the supper league. So yeah, maybe add an extra, because yeah, a supper always sounds great, doesn't it? You've had your tea and then it's a little bit extra. But with supper,
it depends if it's a last supper though. If it's a last supper league.
Well, I just thought that supper works so well because it, you know, it either makes you fat because you've eaten just before you've gone to bed, or it gives you indigestion. And I think as a, you know, the fat cats, it would have made them fat, and the rest of us, it just gave us indigestion, saying that that's not what football's about.
Oh, I like your analogy. It's as if you've not been working on that at all.
Anyway, while we're talking about working on stuff, FA Vars, it is a magical competition for steps 5 and 6 now, and we'll talk to a couple of managers. But you said you've been doing a little bit of research. I mean, what sort of magic can you wow us with? There's a number of names in there that we've spoken about years after years in this competition, particularly in the northern section. But there's some other names that people might not have heard of before.
Well, you're right. Yeah, when I say wow you with incredible statistics and knowledge, I'm not on that scale. I mean, what I find interesting, I mean, the likes of, you know, Warrington Raylands 1906 FC, who have got a tough game against West Auckland. I mean, they're owned by Paul Stretford, oh. Wayne Rooney's agent. He bought the club in 2014, invested about £100,000 before he actually joined the club, and they've got a really good facilities there. And the name Rylands is the area, and they've gone back to Warrington Rylands 1906 FC. We know about West Auckland and all the history in regards to that football club. Well, there's a couple of clubs that, I'm just looking through my notes because I do prepare for this show, and that's probably one of the reasons why you got me on, because of my encyclopedic non-Dave Anderson quality. Where are we now? We've got clubs that, you know, Hadley, established in 1882. You know, absolutely incredible, playing in the Essex Senior League. I think they've got round, second round is the best I've ever been in before. You've got Banfield FC 1892. You know, they're the only joint managers in so far in this competition. So that are left in the competition, they're joint managers. And if you want to look at their logo, I've got to say it's probably one of the best logos I've ever seen. It's like a Soviet logo. I mean, it's red. It's got two stars on the top. It's bold. It's sort of like, you know, real old sort Soviet socialist. And I think they started because it was 1892, but I think they started with like a group of bricklayers. I think they were builders and bricklayers that started the football club. They got through to the fourth round in 2019-2020. But the one thing what I did find, and I might be right, I might be wrong with this, I don't know, but there's a club that could win this competition twice in the same season. It's Hebburn, yes, it is Hebburn. Yeah, Hebburn Sports and Social Club. They play at finalists, yes, and they're in the fifth round, so they could win. Now he's stinging the tail, and they're called the Hornets.
Oh.
But the best nickname is the Moles. Oh, the Moles, well, do you know who the Moles are?
No, I'm looking at the across Flatwell Heath. Maybe I've seen some wildlife in Flatwell Heath in the time.
No, they're called the Flatwell Heath. Are called the Heathens.
Of course they are.
And I'll give you another couple of clues so I can look through my notes to find where I've put this.
I'll go back to Hadley. Of course, you mentioned Hadley, and we've had mention of Hadley before in their previous runs in the Vars. Matt Gray, manager at Sutton United, of course, strong connections to Hadley. I think still involved with some sponsorship of players there as well. So if Hadley made the FA Vars final this year and Sutton made promotion to the Football League, that would be one of those remarkable stories. And then suddenly the national media would be interested in non-league football, as they should be.
Well, yeah, well, they're always interested in a good story which lasts for about 5 minutes and they go off to find something else, don't they? And that is the downside of things. I mean, Handsworth Villa as well. I mean, they're established in 1976. It's the first time they've been this far in the fourth round twice, actually, I should say, but the first time they've gone as far as this. They're called the Villains.
They are called probably one of the first non-league games I ever saw would have been between Austerley and Hanworth Villa, probably then in the South West Middlesex League or something like that when my dad was first managing. So, I've known of Hanworth Villa. That I'm actually older than them, so that's sort of...
Well, you are the encyclopedia of non-league football. I mean, that's the thing.
Oh, no.
There's
always someone in non-league football that knows far more than any of us all put together.
You are right, yes. I mean, interesting as well, there's only one fan-owned club in the competition, that Congleton Town, who in 2014 became the Bears, as they're known, playing in the North West Counties. But again, I mean, there's some wonderful names of grounds as well. I mean, you know, and again, let our listener, rather than me give this information out, go and investigate these clubs, because there are some great... There's a club that play at All Mutton. I'm like, what? It's Banfield FC. Banfield are the Moles.
I see. Yeah.
And so I said the logo. So they're called the Moles, and the logo is Soviet in its style. But 1892. I mean, it's just amazing the amount of history within these clubs and the stories that they could tell. You know, and Imagine going back in time to those clubhouses when they first started, and you know, to go through two wars, and the football club still survives and do work in the community, and still going strong today, and talking to the managers as we're going to do this afternoon, this evening, talking about the possibility of going to Wembley. You know, it's absolutely wonderful. It's I think it's every club and players and manager's dream to get to Wembley. If it's the FA Vars, FA Trophy, or FA Cup. You know, whatever way you get there, you get there. I mean, I know a few players that went to Wembley with Harrogate Town and, you know, absolutely said the best experience, best feeling, and to score there as well, which, you know, was absolutely wonderful. We were there with North Ferriby versus Wrexham a few years ago again, absolutely incredible. And even though it's the new Wembley opposed to the old Wembley, it still is magical. And, you know, it's, I think for a lot of managers as well, that I've got good squads and good teams. Yeah. And they don't get it. They don't make it as Dave has. And Dave will probably say it's his pinnacle of his footballing career, opposed to taking over the Spurs job. But don't tell anyone you heard that on this show first. It's a competition that if you've got a good team and you're a decent manager, you want to win. And if you don't win it, you can regret it because you then move up to the next step. But you never get a chance because you're into the trophy then, which is, we have to say, it's a much tougher trophy based upon the fact that there's the National League are involved in it as well. But yeah, absolutely wonderful. And this weekend, you know, it's a pity that supporters aren't going to be there, but I'm sure they are all in spirit. Whoever gets through to the next round, they're really starting to sniff the turf, aren't they? And hopefully, if it's not a non-elite team, they'll be allowed to stay over the night before.
So let's move to our first guest, FA Vars again this week, and it's the fifth round proper with another set of highly competitive fourth round matches played last weekend. One shot came with victory for Step 6 North Ferriby over West Auckland Town, but on Wednesday the FA ruled that they played an ineligible player. I love that word, that's always good for on radio. And West Auckland were reinstated into the competition and now preparing for a trip to Warrington Rylands this Saturday. An interesting week for our next guest then, and a pleasure to welcome manager at West Auckland Town, Gary Forrest.
Evening,
Gary. It's crazy times that we live in anyway, but I guess you take your opportunity with both hands, but you've got a feel for North Ferriby.
Do I feel for North Ferriby? Let's not forget this is the second round, twice on the trot now this has occurred. So it happened in the round previously with CM Red Star, and they managed to convince the FA to allow a replay to be played on that one, which they then won the replay. So this is the second round on the trot where the same mistake seems to have occurred. So I have sympathy for the players who, you know, are now removed out of the competition, haven't won the game. And I've got to be totally honest and say that I sat down with my management team earlier in the week, and you know, we had a debate whether or not to write to the FA and say, listen, you know, we don't particularly want to go through off the back of a defeat. We would be interested in maybe replaying the game and going through on merit. What was then pointed out to me, quite rightly, is that we picked up a couple of players' suspensions as well and a couple of injuries, and, you know, there's no way M players would be missing from that replay game. So it wasn't a like for like. If we could rewind the clock and just play like for like, then you know, I would have been open to a replay. Just because it's not the best circumstance to go through into the next round in, to be honest with you. You like to earn it, don't you? And all the press has been about, you know, earning your right to enter competitions and be in competition. You know, but you know, we are where we are. We'll hopefully grasp the opportunity that's being given to us, and we'll go to Warrington and hopefully we'll give a much better of account of ourselves this week.
So were you aware as the game finished or as the game was played that there might be an issue, or when was it brought to your attention?
I was made aware near the end of the game, to be honest with you, that there was an issue, that they might have played a player who had two yellow cards and therefore shouldn't have been playing. So, you know, I was made aware of that at that point, and it was like, okay, let's see how that unfolds over the next couple of days. So you know, in the changing room after and on the bus back, you know, we were aware that there was an issue. But that was simply off the back of Twitter feeds, to be honest with you, where their previous games, they posted on Twitter that a certain player had been booked twice. Now, it had already been booked and then had been booked again. So, you know, we didn't know how much validity there was behind that. So we were waiting for clarification from the FA.
I suppose one positive note is that the FA have actually found out very quickly and acted upon it. So it gives you the opportunity on Saturday.
Yeah, well, to be fair, we only had 24 hours to put in our complaint. Normally you've got 3 days, because the game is week to week, they'd shorten that timeline. So all credit to our secretary, who was quick off the mark, realised the situation, wrote to the FA straight away, and then enabled the FA to make their decision. So, you know, I think the club and the players need to thank Dave for doing that. But, you know, it's all in vain if we turn up on Saturday and put a similar performance in, you know, because we weren't at the races in the first half on Saturday.
Well, talking of the game itself, Gary, obviously, you know, as a club, you know, you've been finalists twice in the last 10 years. You've beat Concert in this run of games so far. What do you think is going to take you to go to Warrington Rylands 1906 FC and to put in that performance? Will it help the fact that you've been given this opportunity again, or you're just going to have to play a lot better than you did the weekend?
Well, at the weekend, to be honest with you, you know, North Ferry probably played the most direct football I've seen in a long time. They had two. They brought in a centre forward from Alfreton Town for the competition. Big 6'4", big centre forward, old fashioned target man, and they already have a very big target man as well, who must be 6'5". And they hit a lot of direct balls. We had a very small back four out to people, apart from Gary Brown. The rest of them aren't the strongest in the air. So the first 15, 20 minutes, you know, we couldn't deal with that. And we weren't picking up the seconds off the back of off it as well. So, and they did dominate the first 45 minutes. We were 2-0 down, and you know, they deserved to be 2-0 up. We changed the shape around the second half, and the first 20, 25 minutes of the second half, to be honest, we missed two or three really, really good chances. Their keepers pulled off two great saves. And you know, we could easily have been back in the game, and then it would have been interesting to see how it would unfold from there. What we've got to do on Saturday, and we know Warrington because they've just beaten the side out of our league shielding. We know Warrington, we know what the strengths are, and we know, you know, how they play the game, and we've got to go there and we've got to be stronger. We've got to be difficult to beat. You know, the defence have got to put in a really strong, solid performance, do the basics well. Because at this stage of the competition, it's the team that does the basics well is the team and takes the chances in the final third, the team that tends to go through. You know, and that's what the players have got to realise. You've got to do the basics well. You've got to win the first. You've got to dominate the second. And, you know, you've got to put a shift in. And if you do that, you do that really well, you've got a chance. In the first half on Saturday against North Derby, we didn't do that, to be fair.
Now, the fact that you've actually seen Warrington Rylands because of the Shieldsdon game, does that give you a slight advantage? Because possibly a lot of clubs haven't been able to travel or to watch other clubs. And I know at this stage of the actual tournament, scouting your opposition is imperative. So do you think that's given you a little bit of an edge?
I don't know. I haven't personally seen them. We've had some good reports on them, and we've got obviously. I was manager at Shieldsdon for a lot of years, so I've got people at Shieldsdon who've given me a lot of information. The other thing is we've been able to watch the game back on YouTube. The same as they've been able to watch our game against North Derby. So, I think we're both going on a similar playing field, to be fair, because, you know, a couple of rounds ago, we played Northwich, who they'll know very well, who will be able to give them a decent report on us. So, you know, I think we'll... It's that unknown again. I got a report on North Derby telling me they were a small side. I kid you not, when I rocked up on Saturday, I was like I'd gone to the land of the Giants. I was like, where the hell has this person got this report from? You know what I mean?
I suppose
Two 6 foot five centre forwards.
Like you said, that they brought a new centre forward in. That's the sort of times we're living in at the moment, isn't it? Because you are some of the only competitive games that are taking place at the moment. So there's an opportunity for the clubs to stretch the rules, shall we say?
Yeah, we actually talked about that on the bus down because there had been a rumour that we're going to bring in a few more. Players and I actually said to my assistant manager Brian Atkinson at the time, I said I don't believe they'll do that, and the reason I say that is if I was a player and I'd get in the club to the fourth round or something, you know, and they'd started in the qualifying rounds as well, by the way. Mm. And then as we're getting nearer Wembley, they're starting to bring players in who, you know, for a fact, a few players that you know for a fact are only coming in for the one reason, and then they'll be going back to their own clubs again. You know, it's not the sort of club where you'd want to play. You wouldn't want to stay around at that sort of club. So I'm not convinced. Personally, we haven't done it. I know Shieldsdon didn't do it. I know Hebburn haven't done it. You know, I know they brought one player in, but it was only one. you know. So I'm not convinced sides are doing that, if I'm honest with you. And that's good to see. It's good to see, because it could have been, you know, free for all and brought players in from Conference North sides, etc. But I'm not aware. I don't think that's actually happening. I might be wrong, but I don't think it's happening.
But it devalues the cup competition as well, doesn't it? If that was the case,
of course, because it does.
You know, you've got teams, you've got the Vars, and you've got the trophy. And if you're bringing players in from a higher division of football, it might as well just be the trophy again, you know, rather than, you know, and then to say that we've won the Vars, and you actually look back and you've got four or five different players from a higher league. Well, have you really won it? I mean, you know, the history might say you do, but it probably for a lot of supporters and a lot of people in football, it wouldn't be the right thing. And it would never be a really just final or just trophy.
Exactly. And then you've got the fallout, to be honest with you. You know, it's the players that get you there. You know, the manager picks the team and he puts the team out and he sets some tactics. But ultimately, you know, it's about the 11 players or 14 players that end up on the pitch at whatever point. You know, and to disregard your players in that manner by bringing loads of players just for the last few stages of the Vars, I think he'd be on borrowed time as a manager. He'd certainly lose the change room on that basis. So I'm not convinced that's actually going to be something that would occur.
Yeah.
Yep. So you're now, what, 3 wins away from Wembley. You've got to gee these lads up for this. You know, you've got a game every week if you keep playing like this, in the biggest game of their lives, potentially. You've already touched on the fact of how important the Vars is. Yeah, Swampy's mentioned about the importance of the Vars to the club, but for you as well, it's one of those competitions that you've nearly made it, haven't you? Is it one of those that your now lifelong ambition to make it to Wembley in the final?
I wouldn't say it's my lifelong ambition, but at football at this level, it's the one trophy I haven't won yet. You know, I've got to the semi-final and we got beat in extra time. We scored a genuine equaliser, which would have put us through in the last kick of the game, and it was ruled off for offside. And, you know, the camera and the video clearly shows he was significantly onside. So that still hurts to this day, you know, losing that semi-final in the manner that we lost it really does hurt to this day. I've been in 3 quarter-finals so far as well, and countless fourth and fifth rounds. So, you know, at the moment, I seem to be the bridesmaid all the time as far as the competition is concerned. As a manager at this level, it's the holy grail, and you get your side to Wembley, and you go and win a trophy at Wembley. It's got to be your ambition of any manager at this level, and it's the one trophy I haven't done. On our day, I genuinely think we're as good as any side in the competition. We've got some very good players, you know, and we're training tonight. Hopefully that bad performance on Saturday, there's a bit of a kick up the backside that they might have needed to get back to doing what we need to do. And that's, you know, the stuff I mentioned earlier, do your basics well, win the first, win the seconds, cover the ground, you know, and be better in the final third. So it might serve as a really good kick up the backside that last Saturday.
Yeah, well, talking of a kick up the backside, we had one of those for football this week where we spoke earlier on the show about the Super League, and it would be a miss of me not to mention the Thomas Lipton Trophy, the first World Cup that West Auckland Town won back in 1909 and then retained in 1911. That beating Juventus, wasn't it? Back then, that's still a starting point, I guess, for almost every conversation about the club.
Well, the remarkable thing is the amount of people that you know, I meet a lot of people in my business life, et cetera, and from all over the country, not all over the world. And, you know, we get talking about my hobbies of football, et cetera, and I start telling people the story about West Auckland winning the first World Cup, and there's, you know, 99% of people have no idea that it actually happened. And I actually end up pointing them to the YouTube movie or the movie with Dennis Waterman and Tim Healy and et cetera, and say, well, watch this film. It tells you the story of it. You know, and they're actually fascinated. They're fascinated by what actually happened when you start telling the story. And it is a fantastic story, you know. And it's something the club is hugely proud of. And it's just a shame, really, that there's not enough people know about it. But you know, I remember when I was a kid. Actually, my dad was in the RAF. He'd just come back from Hong Kong, And it was a Friday night, I think, or Saturday night. I'm babysitting my little sister, and the film comes on, and it's The Captain's Tale. I remember sitting there watching it, like 12-year-old, something like 12, 13-year-old, thinking, Jesus, you know, I want to go and play for this team. That was my dream at the time, was to go and play for them, because they'd won the first World Cup, and it was, you know, and here I am today, 3 games away from taking them back to Wembley, you know. So, see how it unfolds.
Well, you know, we often talk about, yeah, Hollywood should look at non-league more often to pick up one of these stories. Yeah, you touched upon, you know, your working life away from it. It's been a rough old year for you and a rough old year for non-league football and everybody involved. But it'd be a great story if you did make it to Wembley.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of good stuff happening at the club as well. You know, there's a new clubhouse gone up. The ground's been redecorated, repainted. The pitch has been put into fact. You know, not having football on the pitch for about a year is really the amount of energy and effort gone into looking after the pitch and the maintenance of the ground. The place looks like a totally different place, if I'm honest with you. And we're just desperate to get. We're desperate to get fans back. We're desperate to get fans in the new clubhouse and enjoying getting back to football and watching the local football teams. And I think, you know, I think it's important for communities as well. And what's happened this week, you know, with the big football clubs once again proving, you know, how little interest they've actually got in the support of these days, you know. And I think it's something that lower levels, and particularly the non-league, really do need to latch on to. I don't know about a lot of people, but I get particularly bored watching the Premiership football at times. You know, I really do. I've been watching all these sideways passes, etc. I turn it off halfway through. You know, I'm a big Everton fan. Well, I used to be in the 80s and 90s when they played forward passes. But watching these days, it's about the 17th sideways pass, you know, in the last 10 minutes. I kind of, you know, non-league football is... For me, somebody gives me a choice to go and watch a non-league match or go and watch, you know, Sheffield United against Burnley, I know where I'm going, you know. So I think, you know, I don't think people realise what they're missing out on. And there's a real opportunity now for the fans to take back football and, you know, hopefully engage more in local non-league football and help them clubs as well. It would be great if that was to happen.
I totally agree with you, Gary, but I've got to ask you a question. You just said to me, I mean, I have a family that live in South Shields and Jarrah, and I know it's a hotbed of football. My cousin has been involved in non-league football in a goalkeeping coach capacity over a 3 or 4 year period. They're all either Newcastle or Sunderland supporters or a local non-league supporter. How on earth did you become an Everton fan? How's that allowed, in fact?
Well, my dad's from Highton in Liverpool. My granddad lived about 3 doors down from Peter Reid's dad in Highton. So, you know, my dad, like, kind of, the only way we get fans these days, Evan, we have to breed them and, you know, convert them. So, you know, from being a kid, it was like, well, you have to support Evan. So you tend to follow your dad, don't you, to a degree? Yeah, yeah. Most kids do. So, you know, that's how I ended up in Everton. I mean, my early life, I didn't live in the North East. I didn't move to the North East till I was 12, 13 years old, really. You know, so...
Now, you can't, so you haven't got the answer.
Well, yeah, it actually has grown on me a bit. But, yeah, it was 12, 13 when I moved to the North East. So, I was, I've just stayed in there. I've stayed in Everton fan. I loved the 80s, obviously, and the start of the 90s, but... You know, getting back to the Premiership, I just can't be dealing. I can't be dealing with all this falling over every time anybody goes near them and the rolling around and the sideways passes. And
I think you're right.
It's just not.
It's interesting because, you know, as you say, through lockdown, I mean, I have not watched Premier League football. I mean, as Tim will know, I mean, I commentate for FC United of Manchester, but now I actually live in Belgium. So I come back as often as I can, once every 6 weeks, to do commentary for FC United. 12 months of having to endure watching Premier League football has been absolutely awful. I get it to watch it for free as well. I wouldn't pay for it. As you say, sideways passing. Yeah. I mean, Every time you get a foul, it's the rolling on the floor. I mean, if they just started wearing basic shin pads, that might be a start. And football boots actually have some form of leather on them or synthetics on them. But the game, as you say, it's not enjoyable. It's average to say the least. The what I've seen in it is that the footballers that the manager always said he's fantastic in training, but he can never do it on the pitch, has proven he can do it on the pitch because there are no supporters there. So you've got average footballers now that look like world beaters that actually are average footballers. And when the fans come back, you'll see how average they are again. But the game's gone. I mean, at least Everton, to a degree, play the ball a bit quicker on occasion. The same with Burnley because they've haven't got a finite amount of resources. But the rest of the teams in general, it's just tedious.
What a good reason to go and watch your local non-league club when we're able to get back. But in the interim, Glenn, we've got to let you go. You've got a training session you've got to go and take. But hopefully, there'll be an opportunity for some fans to get along to non-league finals day. And you guys will be there and we'll be able to continue this conversation socially distanced, of course. But thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
Good luck in the next game,
Matt. All right, fellas. All right. Cheers, fellas. Thanks a lot. See you soon.
So, keeping with the FA Vars, let's talk to another manager preparing his side for an away day this weekend. With the expulsion of North Ferriby this week, they are in fact the only Step 6 club remaining in the competition. The lowest ranked club of 16 from the initial 612 entries, I understand. Many scalps taken by our next guest in reaching this stage, and it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at United Services Portsmouth, Mr. Glenn Turnbull. Welcome, Glenn.
Good evening.
It is a good evening. Now, I can see you on video there, sun shining behind you, everybody's smiling, everybody's looking forward to another big game this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just prepping for training. Coaches are just out on the pitch putting the cones out and I'm sat in the dugout watching them, so it's all good.
That's true management style, that is. I like that. Now, you're in the Wessex League Division 1 when the league happens. But is it four scalps you've taken from Premier sides this season in that league?
Brockenhurst twice, once in the Wessex Cup and once in the Vars. Tadley in the Wessex Cup as well, and then four, I think, in the Vars now, or three in the Vars.
Yeah, in the previous 16 seasons, I understand, the club had only ever won six FA Vars games. And then if you win on Saturday at Tavistock, and, you know, it's a big task, that's another six you've won this season alone.
Yeah. It's certainly an achievement and one we're really proud of, actually.
Yeah, until Tuesday as well. You were flying in all competitions, but defeat, was it the Hampshire Senior Invitational Cup? I'm trying to remember all the names of all these things. Can you spin a positive off of that into this weekend's tie, though, just to make sure that the guys are properly focused?
Yeah, we made nine changes, I think. We played Jeffers just to try and bring him down a bit, the skipper, just from his winning penalty, just to keep his feet back on the ground. We accepted the invitation into the competition because, with the Vars being last weekend, 17th, we got a semi-final of the Wessex Cup, and that was originally planned for the 22nd of May. So potentially there was 5 or 6 weeks with no games, which was another enforced break. So by joining the Invitation Cup, it gave us an opportunity to have games without having to set up any friendlies. And probably in hindsight now, maybe we wish we hadn't. Tuesday was a blip. Didn't play well, but it was always going to be, I suppose, after the Lord Mayor's show.
Yeah, and in that the first lockdown season, which seems a long time ago now, but you were top of the table and looking set for promotion there. Last season, well, didn't really get going, did it? But and I understand the club are keen on promotion if it's available with all this restructure at steps 4-6. You touched on Jeffers' penalty there, but a penalty win against Christchurch in the last round, and I saw something locally because I'm not too far from you that there were 1,100 people watching on the stream at one point. I'd imagine that helps create a buzz around the place as you organise them for training tonight.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal, really. The past 2 weeks have just built and built. Saturday was just, I said to the news tonight, the paper, the local paper, stood there at 11 o'clock. I quite enjoy that hour before kickoff. And although there was no fans, there was a real buzz around the ground, and it built to a head. And then Saturday afternoon, you can imagine what that was like with the players. Sunday was a bit of a blur until I was on the radio then for an hour and a half. It's all very surreal for all of us here, but long may it continue. I think this week we've had four players interviewed in the paper. I think the only time some of them were in it was Court Roundup. So.
Swampy.
Yeah, so it's just been a real good buzz. Just literally pulling up here tonight as we pulled up outside the training ground, a car pulled up and a bloke shouted out of his window, "Good luck Saturday, mate." It's, oh, thank you.
You're saying obviously these extra games that may have been a bit of a burden in hindsight, but does that also mean that you're probably more football fit than other teams? Because obviously the amount of games that you've been playing, and there's the difference obviously between playing friendly games and playing competitive games. So being football fit, actually mentally prepared for the game, do you think that's probably helped and might help you against Tavistock on Saturday?
Yeah, we arranged two friendlies prior to that. So Tuesday was our first game in the Invitational League. So that was kind of after the last round of the Vars. But definitely between the Vars game, it gives me an opportunity to get... So we played, I think, five of the bench that from Saturday that didn't get on, played the other night. And again, like you say, spot on. It's just putting minutes into their tank. Mm. And then if we need them, making sure they're sharp and prepped, ready to go.
Yeah. A question that was raised earlier on, actually, in the show was in regards to teams possibly playing higher caliber players in this competition. The question I just want to ask really is, have you stayed with your main squad, or you've not been in mind of maybe bringing in what we don't call the
old days? No, absolutely not. No, I think Christchurch signed three Southern League players for their game the other day. They're centre-half from Winchester and two players from Poole. And we just went with the side. We talked around it to the point where even the reserves had had a couple of meaningful fixtures before the Vars. And I said to my reserve manager, whilst I'll get minutes into the one I want to, I won't devalue your competition by throwing lots of people at it. I'm not sure if you know, but as a management team, we're moving to Moneyfields, another local Southern League team in the summer. And I suppose it would have been easy for me to go and try and get a couple of them to play. But I trust implicitly the A team we've got in that's been around us, 20, if I count the two lads that missed out at the weekend, and I'll go with them and we'll go as far as we can go with those players. And if that means we fall at the next hurdle, but we've given it a best shot, then fair play.
Yeah, exactly. That's the right thing.
You touched on it there. That was you must be reading my script, because that was my next point. Actually, was it? Yeah, we said about you. You're creating a great buzz there, and you know, tough opportunity again this weekend. You are moving on to Moneyfields at the end of the season. You know, our own colleague on the show, Dave Anderson, he did the same with Chertsey Town, went all the way to Wembley and won the competition, and then disappeared. Have you dreamt about that moment?
I suppose, when we drew Porchester in the second qualifying round, the team probably everyone fancied from Portsmouth to rip up trees this year, we kind of just thought, oh, well, we'll move it to their ground and we'll get a few extra bums on seats and make a bit of money that way, because obviously the prize money's not that great at that round. And so we didn't really think about it then. But as the rounds ticked on, I've jokingly said a couple of times, we'll have to get a tailor lined up ready to go. But it's not too far away from having to think about things like that. But we're just really trying to focus week by week. It's a blessing in one way that it's literally Saturday, Saturday, Saturday at the moment. Organising a coach this week has been difficult. So the prep from that side is difficult. So it kind of gives us enough to worry about rather than worrying about what's happening in the end of May.
Mm. And United Services... Portsmouth, that used to be known as Portsmouth Royal Navy, and the name changed to open it up to non-naval participants. Are there actually any servicemen within the squad?
Yeah, my assistant, Fraser, he's a lieutenant commander. Andy Todd, lad that scored the first penalty and is probably our top scorer through the competition. Sweeney, as we call him. He's RN, and one of the midfielders, Fraser's boy, actually, Cam Quirk. He's just joined up. He's actually joining us the weekend. He's on placement in Cold Rose and has got special dispensation to travel across Cornwall and Devon to get to the game.
Well, there's those Hollywood stories, Swampy, that we're always looking for. You know, when they lift the trophy. I mean, I live fairly local, so there are great facilities for your level there in the shadow of Gunwharf Quays. If anybody's ever suffered shopping in Portsmouth, it is limited in terms of developing though as a club, isn't it? Because it's great for the first team and the reserves, but I guess building as a youth team as other clubs do. That's where the club suffers.
Yeah, so we brought in, there's a couple of good boys teams in and around the town, but a lot of them now have got progression into men's football. So last couple of years, we brought a team in from Pitwick. We haven't got any junior football at all. And that's always been the difficulty here. It's always been one of the problems that if we lose players, we have to go out and get other players. And I've said in the paper, each lad, it's £100 to sign on for us here. So they don't get paid. They might get a sponsor to pay their £100. But that in itself is difficult, attracting players. And so we haven't got a youth setup that generates a lot of money for our club. And that's one of the drawbacks, really, that is difficult, I think, going to be to recreate or sustain the good buzz you've said about, and it's been well documented about the camaraderie we've got, but that's going to be really hard to keep that momentum going for the managers that come in behind me.
But you've got this big game then, a trip to Tavistock on Saturday. You mentioned difficulties of organising a coach and things like that, and I guess getting a group of lads, it's probably one of the biggest travels they've probably done as a football team together, and it's managing their energy, their expectations, their fears, their worries. That's going to be a long coach journey.
Well, that we tried desperately to come down Friday night and get a hotel, but although it's classed as a premium competition, or we're not classed in that level of team.
You're not elite. So
elite. Sorry, that's it. We're not. It's an elite competition, but we're not an elite team. I felt, you've watched us then. So we weren't able to get a hotel. We were hoping to come down Friday night. Then that comes with different complexities. Again, if you know our group of lads, that would have been stopping them being in there, either in the bar, or hopefully they wouldn't be. But if not, in FIFA competition at 4 o'clock in the morning or something. But again, it's just different experiences for us all. And so now it is going to be getting the coach down, managing their expectations, keeping their feet on the floor, keeping a lid on their nervous energy to get them to the game. So, but again, it's what we all want, really. It's something that's testing us all.
Is that not annoying to a certain degree for you, the fact that, you know, you could have been able to prepare, you know, for the Friday, getting down there, not being classed as an elite team? It would be interesting to see what the FA do if you do get to the final, whether you're allowed to be there on the Friday before, because, you know, that's, for me, it sounds ridiculous.
Hopefully, so the final's the 22nd, so looks like the of May, so the restrictions ease on the 17th. So for the final, all things being equal, we should be able to, but it sounds ridiculous to say this was probably one of the localist games we could have got. Yeah. So to be 3.5 hours away into Devon from Portsmouth is still reasonably local. We could have been, until obviously this week, North Ferriby or something like that, and that would have been a real trek going up and doing what we've got to do on the morning, because we don't really want much more than 2 hour sessions for the lads sat cooped up on a coach. The coach, we've got to socially distance, so we've had to hire a 60-seater coach to take 29 people, because the drivers, they've got to have two drivers because of the length of time we want to go. So all these different levels of complexity and things is what we've got to deal with, really.
Yeah, and again, it's cost, isn't it? You've already mentioned that, you know, the prize money in this competition, you know, it normally, in most of the rounds, it probably covers putting the floodlights on and everything else that goes with it. But I'd imagine that this round, it's not even going towards much of the coach.
Oh, no. So I think the coach has cost us £1,400 to get down there. Obviously, we can claim, but Tavistock aren't going to be generating any money because they haven't got any fans coming in. So we'll probably end up losing £1,000 through this. So again, I said in the paper the other day, I think we've earned what Paul Pogba earns in 3 hours or something. I think it was the other day. We've earned by winning 6 games. So, and then you take out the costs that we've had. We obviously had to pay for Christchurch expenses the weekend. We Millbrook, when they came from Devon, we've had to reimburse them some money because we did have fans in on that day. So, yeah, we've earned five. It's like anything. We've earned £5,500, but we've probably spent out nearer two and a half. So it's still better money than United. Like you said, like United services have earned in a long while, but it's not. We won't be able to go on an end of season holiday, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, Swampy and I have discussed elsewhere in this show about the Super League suggestions and discussions this week, and there was a suggestion that player power in the Premier League clubs have played a part in it all falling apart. If there are any of those players listening, this is what football's all about, and this is where football needs some money.
We are fortunate that the facilities you just mentioned about are fantastic for us, but they're gifted to us by the Royal, by the Navy, so we don't ever have a lot of expenditure for that, but equally we have very little income, so we're not blessed with a huge. We're getting better now, clearly. I was inundated with ball boys the weekend when it was all going to but this weekend we're not blessed with a huge fan base, so you know, 35 men, a couple of dogs come and watch us. By the time we've taken a fiver off of most of them and then paid the refs, put on food, we're lucky to break even most weeks. So, yeah, it's definitely where the money's needed in football.
And this is the tale of successful clubs. Glenn, we can hear them. Training's already started up in the background there, so we better let you go off and do some organising or at least keep an eye on who's fit and who's looking good for Saturday. But thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show and good luck at the weekend.
Thanks ever so much. Thank you for having me.
Good luck.
So it's time of the week then to head on over to virtual and non-league paper towers and return to the show for senior writer Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. It's been a weird week. Not the busiest of weeks in non-league this week, but I guess since we spoke, we've had the formal appointment of Mark Ives at the National League long-term. Didn't seem to get full support from some of those chief critics of the league, though.
Yeah, I think... obviously, Mark, I've joined at the start of the year in January, you know, stepping into a sort of really difficult job and a difficult time at that stage. You know, he was sort of picking up the baton, which had been left for him sort of in a really tricky position in terms of the funding and everything that's sort of gone with that. And then he's had to try and manage things from there. Obviously, it was only an interim appointment at that stage. So at the end of March, then they did a decision as to whether he was going to stay. He is staying. I suppose you perhaps could look at it now as, you know, the start of maybe a new era of the National League in terms of the replacements that's needed. There's a few positions on the board, both voting and non-voting members. Obviously the chairman will be changing as well, so I think maybe it's probably a good thing to try and continue his work that he started, really, and sort of you know, keep on trying to do what he's trying to do. You know, I understand that not everyone will agree with that, but I think once you get into a stage where you're changing the people at the top quickly, you know, you almost sort of get into a football club sort of situation, really, in terms of changing managers every season or something like that. So I think it probably needs a bit of stability now. He's sort of seen these difficult few months through, whether you agree or disagree with the decisions or things that have gone on, you know, he's there. You know, I think one thing is for sure is he's certainly improved the communication, both to us in the media and but also from what I hear generally to clubs, and is willing to listen to clubs. So yeah, I mean, interesting to sort of see where it goes from now. But yeah, I think probably, you know, I wasn't sort of desperately surprised to see him stay on, really, to be honest. I thought that probably would happen.
Yeah, and I think similar to when we spoke with the Trident Leagues last week, where we threw in the suggestion that there were still vacancies at steps 1, 2, and 3 in the pyramid if they were going to, you know, promote people or fill those gaps, that, you know, maybe that they should be filling those gaps as well. And I think the point was made back that, you know, non-league does need some level of stability just to keep it ticking along. And I think you're right there, that there needs to be someone, just whether it's you agree with his hand on the rudder or not, just while everything else is falling into place or pulling that team together and readjusting, it's good that there is a point of contact for clubs, media, and the rest of football sort of moving forward. Now, obviously, we've got National League games going on. It's still all to play for, really, up the top of the National League. Various fixtures again this weekend. But we are seeing some of those results that we feared nearer the bottom of the table. Obviously, our old friend Dave Anderson seems to have gone in there with Simon Bassey and getting some good results. But elsewhere in the
move
the
on
table,
quickly,
yeah. Well, and he has. And elsewhere in the table, we're seeing a 6-0 defeat for Wealdstone at midweek. I think that's their second sort of heavy defeat in recent weeks. It does mean that depending on what fixtures you've got left as a club at the top of the table, that could have a big impact into where you end up in the final shake-up.
Yeah, it does. I think sort of spot on there, Tim, really, in terms of sort of saying about those sort of heavy defeats that you see, or perhaps clubs shipping more goals than they usually would. Yeah, 13 goals in the last two games. We were staying at home. I was there for the 7-2 defeat last weekend to Hartlepool, who... our side, obviously, who have absolutely everything to play for at the moment, who are full of motivation. You know, Wealdstone, the complete opposite. You know, a club building and pointing towards sort of next season and trying to sort of get foundations in place. You know, they've been cutting costs for months now, understandably, with no relegation. Similar to Woking, who, you know, have again conceded quite a few goals at home recently, which is unusual for them and for any Alan Dawson side. So I think, yeah, these are sort of the results we feared perhaps would happen. I think in a usual season, you know, you're not going to go to Wealdstone in sort of the final month of the season and sort of see them roll over like that if they were fighting for their lives. You know, you'd have... you know, 1,000-odd sort of Wealdstone fans in there, tight to the pitch. It'd be a really sort of tough day. And you know, I mean, really for the sort of Hartlepool, Sutton, Torquay up there, you know, they're probably looking at it thinking, God, you know, I hope we're playing those bottom teams in our running, because it's a very different season without relegation, and where suddenly those games become 10 times more difficult when the pitches are dry and the sun's shining and the ball's bobbling around. All of a sudden now they're not quite so difficult. So I think fixture run-ins look like it's going to be a really important factor at it towards the end of this season, because I can't really see teams like Hartlepool, you know, slipping up at those teams at the bottom, who effectively have nothing to play for. You know, but that, you know, that said, as you have mentioned, Tim, but you know, Barnett, Simon Bassey, Dave Anderson, you know, they've gone three games unbeaten, so you know, maybe it's not quite such a talking point as we're sort of making it out to be, really.
You mentioned
the other side of it, of players playing for contracts, etc.
You mentioned those, you know, hard and bobbly pitches. Of course, we're going to be playing for an extra month as well. So depending how the weather does pan out, the sun might be out, but it's I don't think it's drying out pitches. It's certainly not that warm out there to do that. But you know, come the end of the you know, in those final couple of weeks, I know, you know, one game I've already flagged up, Saturday the 22nd of May, which I think is the penultimate Saturday before the end of the season. Sutton against Hartlepool United is going to be a big game. Obviously, that won't be a bobbly pitch because that'll be, you know, possibly the one of their final games on a 3G service.
Yeah, that was one we've sort of circled in the diary for sure. Obviously, you know, it could actually be the case that Sutton have it wrapped up before it comes to that. Obviously, with their three games in hand over Hartlepool, one game in hand over Torquay. So it could be that they may have it won by then. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be many twists and turns in the weeks to come. There's plenty of other sort of big games. And, we're not perhaps sort of quite into the last sort of 100 metres yet. But, we're certainly getting there. And, it'll be fascinating to see sort of what happens over this next month.
Yeah, so FA VARs every weekend as well at the moment. We've spoken to the bosses at West Auckland Town, United Service Portsmouth this week. Another 14 sides, though, still there with their own. They've all got their own individual stories and twists and turns, particularly in this last season or year and a half, really, of football. So it'll be a fantastic year for them to make the FA VARs final at Wembley, especially with the added carrot of some, if not all, the fans allowed in.
Yeah, that's right. As we've spoken before, FA VAR is such a great competition. Like you say, sort of the stories and sort of the new people you meet and speak to is fantastic. And sort of everyone has a story, really. And it's sort of funny hearing about these new things. I spoke to Cobham a few weeks ago, and they're excited about three buys to get to the fifth round, which is sort of a, amazing sort of story in itself, really. Plymouth Parkway under Lee Hobbs, really sort of passionate guy, has taken them up into step five, and they're in line for a promotion should their application go the right way as part of the FA restructure. So, lots of sort of really interesting lines to look out for again this weekend. The rounds are being ticked off pretty quickly, aren't they, ahead of next month, as they need to be. But it's sure to be another sort of great run in that competition as well. Of course, Heaven Town's still in there. They may be heading back to Wembley in almost consecutive weeks or twice in a month, isn't they?
Yeah, again, those stories are. Yeah, there's plenty in there to keep Hollywood occupied. Plenty to be reported on this weekend with the National League and FA VARs fixtures for you. But what else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, lots in there this weekend as usual. The National League and FA VARs fixtures covered in there in depth with pictures and stats and all the usual bits and bobs. I had a chat with Walton and Hersham, who were knocked out of the FA VARs last weekend, but they're under the ownership of seven youngsters, basically, which I think it's fair to say they're all university students who took over the club a couple of years ago and are trying to take them back to former glories when they're in the Isthmian League for so long. You'd have had a few battles with them over the years, Tim. But, currently in step six at the moment, Combined Counties Division One, they're hoping for a promotion out of the restructure as well. But, certainly a new era and an interesting story there. Also had a chat with Kobe Rowe at Sutton, Sutton centre-back, who was taken to hospital earlier in the season after an injury he picked up in the first month. And and then he spent sort of a few days in intensive care, basically, with a ruptured kidney, which was rather nasty. But he made his return to action last weekend for Sutton, coming on in their victory at Altrincham. So just had a catch-up with him, really, see how he's getting on. Good to see him back. You know, a player who in recent years, has come up from Haringey Borough in the Isthmian League and plucked by Matt Gray at Sutton. And it's just been a bit unlucky, really. Sort of signed in January 2020 and then a pandemic hit. And then when he was sort of in the team at the start of the season, I had a really nasty injury. But, hopefully he can play a part in their running and help them over the line. Also, Chat to Jermaine Anderson at Aldershot, who made his debut in the Championship at just the age of 16 for Peterborough United. He's similarly sort of struggled with injury since then, but you know, feels like he's getting back on track at Aldershot. We also have a bit of reaction to the Super League, as you've been talking about earlier in the show, Tim. You know, seeing what a few people are saying and the FSA and things like that. So yeah, loads in there again this week. Yeah, plenty to read and keep you occupied.
Make sure you grab your copy on your Sunday morning. David, thanks for joining us once again on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you.
That's it then for this week. Thank you to Swampy for joining me. Thank you to all of our guests as well. And thank you for everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season. Join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. I'm there at Tim Fuel. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, various other platforms as well. Now, there's a very, very long list. You can listen via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.